Hey, movie lovers, you can enjoy Real Nerds Podcast in many ways. You can go to our website, realnerdspodcast.com. There you'll find articles and the podcast. You can go to our YouTube channel and you will see the Real Nerds Pod Show. We're also on Blue Sky. Hey, did you know Facebook is still a thing for people? Yep, we're on there too. We are also on Threads. There are many ways to interact with us. All our film adventures are posted on Instagram. If you have a social media account, you can find the Real Nerds Podcast.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
just
can...
Just talk film! Sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will turn out all the gods. Lights, camera, action!
It's that time, everybody. It's time to find out what your favorite scary movie is.
Hang on.
Hey, Ryan, what's your favorite scary movie?
Showgirls. Absolutely terrifying.
Nice.
That's a callback to the original Scream.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
That's what Drew Barrymore says?
No, it's... or maybe it's Scream 2. It's Jamie Kennedy's character. It's Scream 2. He says... just before he's killed, they ask what his favorite scary movie is, and he says, Showgirls, absolutely terrifying. And then he gets pulled in a van and killed. Our movie of the week is Scream 7, and we here at Real Nerds see a new movie, and we podcast our experience to the world every week for 15 years. Need to update our logo for 15.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
I didn't even think about it till just now in my head.
15th anniversary. Well, June. But
yeah. It's coming up. It's already March. Yeah, we're back on the right time. It's March. You know, usually I save nerd news somewhere in the middle or at the end, but today or yesterday we got bad news that Bruce Campbell got diagnosed with cancer, and so he had to cancel a bunch of his appearances this summer. He says it's not curable, but it's treatable, so hopefully he'll be okay. We wish him a speedy recovery because he was going this summer, I think it was pushed to the fall now, he wrote and directed a movie about a man whose wife dies and he's going on a road trip to scatter her ashes. And he's going to be going to Alamo Draft Houses to show it. And when he comes to Denver, I will definitely go. He hasn't directed a movie, I think, since The Man with the Screaming Brain. So I think it's been about 20-something years.
Hmm.
So I'm interested to see it. It's a drama, which... He's a good actor. You know, he's done a lot. He's been in so much stuff, and he's one of my favorites. Obviously, Army of Darkness is my favorite film of all time. So hopefully he'll be back on the road again. And I know you know this. We've met him a few times, and he's always really fun.
Yeah.
With crowds, and my favorite memory with him is when he wrote If Chins Could Kill, and he was signing books at the Mayan. And... it was really cool because you had to go to the tattered cover, buy the book, and get the ticket to the Mayan to get him to sign it. Did you do that with me?
I did, but that was for... It wasn't for the book. It was for a movie that he had coming out. Was that Screaming Brain? Screaming Brain?
Maybe, but I did it for the book, too.
I think he had the book there. Or like a new edition of it.
Yeah, because I have... it's not down here, but I have the first printing of it signed by him.
Yeah.
And I remember I was a manager for Outback at the time. And you bought the book, and it was a meet and greet. And I remember I got the book, and I was with my fucking ex-girlfriend at the time. That's how long ago it was, like 20 years ago, maybe longer. And
it's like 2005, I think.
Yeah, fuck. Anyways, the line was really long, and I got up there, and he was on the second floor. And I went up there. It's my turn. And he went to sign it, and he asked me what I did for a living. And I said, I work at Outback Steakhouse. And he says, oh, I love Outback. I said, you should come into my restaurant. I'll buy you dinner tonight. And he says, oh, if I didn't have to leave tonight, I totally would. And so I gave
him
a gift certificate to Outback Steakhouse that I always carried on me. So I hope he used it. So yeah, he was super nice. And, I met him a couple other times. I mean, when I say met, he was signing stuff. But he's always really generous, and he's, do you remember when he was at Fan Expo, when we were next to the Monster Squad guys, and his line was always sold out and he was there for hours, man, he knows how to work crowds.
Yeah. I remember he did that, last fan standing thing at the Oriental. That was really cool.
I did that at the Alamo with him, and it, I remember because it sold out so fast, that they created a satellite theater as well. And they sold that one out.
Yeah. It was Man with a Screaming Brain. The thing I was getting confused with was, they call me, or my name is Bruce.
Yeah.
Which was 2 years later.
Yeah.
That's so why I was like getting my wires crossed.
So the one I have is, I think it maybe it was that one. No, I think I got both of them signed by him. I can't remember. I'll go look at my books.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I think the Screaming Brain, yeah, he had like a new edition of the Chinska Kill.
Yeah, maybe that's when like I did new get stuff it signed.
In it. Yeah.
I can't remember. No, because I got Make Love the Bruce Campbell Way signed by him too, which is a really fun book. If you haven't read it.
Oh, yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah. Make Love the Bruce Campbell audiobook. Way. Narrated by him.
Yeah.
Is a fictional story starring Bruce Campbell, and it's really well written. And if you're looking for a really fun, really quick read, he also wrote...
Ernie and Emma is his new movie.
Yeah. It's called The Cool Side of the Pillow, and it's just essays by him, and it's really fun. I think you can get it on Amazon for $10. It's a really fun book. So, Hell to the King, Bruce. Speedy recovery. And I'm sure we'll see you soon. Yeah. This week, Brad, we saw Scream 7. Do you recommend not a trip to Woodsboro, but the other town they're living in?
No.
No.
You know, I just have to wonder, like, in a world where this situation has happened 7 times, it's really weird that everyone is so unprepared for a lot of it. And it's like it's reached a national level and people are just like, yeah,
I push back. I think in this one they're a little prepared for it.
Well, Sydney is, but like
and Gail,
but. Yeah. Yes, like the legacy characters are great. They have way more to do. But everyone else, like the ending, the reveal of the killers is so incredibly unsatisfying. Like, I'll tell you later, like what I was thinking the whole movie. And then you find out that, like, the beginning does make sense. So, yeah, I thought it was just a waste. Yeah. Is it really, like, it's, I think it's a waste to like have Sydney back and have her story just be this. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't think it's the worst Scream. I think it's still Scream 3. But, you know, I always like the franchise anyways. Scream 3 went really meta. It has Jay and Silent Bob in it and Wes Craven's Sweet. In it. Have you not seen Scream 3?
No, it's the first one I ever saw.
Yeah, it's the first Scream you've ever seen?
The third one? In the theater? Yeah.
I mean, I thought you meant this Scream 7 is the first one you saw.
No.
Oh, I was like, oh.
No, Scream 3 is gotcha. The first movie okay. of the franchise I saw.
Yeah, I agree with you on a lot of it. Some of it I actually thought was pretty well done. It felt like to me that number 6 took place in New York, and there's some actually really cool scenes in it. I think the scene with Ghostface with a shotgun is really interesting for a slasher film. This one seemed like it was trying to course correct itself and play it safe after the quote unquote controversy of expressing free speech.
Which is interesting when the tagline on the old posters is burn it all down.
Yeah.
It just turns out to yep, go back to playing it safe.
Yeah. So, I don't think it's as terrible as you says it is, but there is some things that I wasn't the biggest fan of. Here's a trailer for Scream 7, which is a great trailer, by the way.
Don't you fucking dare!
Ah! fun.
Scream.
Creepy's kind of hot.
Only in theaters Friday. Get tickets now.
Yeah, we pick up Sydney Evans now. She's remarried to the chief of police.
Joel McHale,
who's really great in it.
The new Dewey.
Yeah, that's which they I think was just an homage because he definitely gets his ass kicked a couple times and stabbed.
And still lives.
What I did like, though, too, is he wasn't like a little bitch. he definitely fought back. Anyways, she's in their new place. She owns her own little coffee shop. She has a daughter named Tatum, who's named after her friend who was killed in the first Scream.
Which, as someone who doesn't follow franchise closely, I was like,
just goes
I don't
by.
Remember Tatum, but sure.
Yeah, it's so she's basically starting a new life. The movie opens in a fun way. The house where the killings happened at the end of the first Scream is now kind of an Airbnb.
Yeah. And a bunch of two fans show up. The guy more of a fan than his girlfriend.
I mean, to me, I don't know if... I mean, there is people that would do that. I don't know how fun it would be to be in a house where people have been murdered.
I would get like a Friday 13th themed house. Yeah. It's based on a movie where no one really died.
Yeah, that's not real.
But in this world, people actually died in that house. Yeah, it's kind of sick.
Yeah. But there's people that are weird like that. So I'm pretty sure Lizzie Borden's house is a tourist spot. So anyways, they're killed, and then the ghost face burns the house down, which you're right, because I mean, there's this huge setup for that, but why does the ghost face do it? Because there's really no reason, because it's never brought up again.
Yeah. Well, if the two people are revealed at the end, like their whole goal is to like fuck with Sydney, and they're sort of like they took time out of their day to go to Woodsboro and then fuck these other two Airbnb people.
Yeah.
Who Sydney would not check up on.
I know. It's really just a set piece.
Yeah.
To show basically a
recap of the franchise.
Yeah. And ghost face killing.
Yeah. Hey, if you're just now getting into Scream, this is what happened.
Yeah. Which it's cool, but it definitely felt studio mandated. Where you're right, it says, hey, this is where Stu Mocker got TV dropped on his face. This is where this person died.
We're going to have Stu Mocker as an AI creation later, yeah. So we need to show the audience who Stu Mocker is if they haven't watched the first Scream.
It was such a cop-out. It would have been so much cooler if it was really him.
If they found a way to explain it. Yeah. I was sitting there going, like, I don't know how they would, but it would be cool if it...
Yeah.
Like, it has to pay off this way. But then they parade, like, all the other AI creations of, like... Oh, here's how we got all the other legacy characters. Like, there's so much fan service that just weighs it down.
And because there's parts of it that I get really invested in it. I think when the ghost face attacks Sydney's family at her home is great. Because, you know, he chases them out and then Gail runs him over with the car.
Yeah.
And you think it's over. Obviously, you know it's not because there's always going to be another one. But
yeah. Well, now there's three instead of two. But what sucks is like that guy is just like, oh, he's just a rando.
Yeah, but when you were watching it, I was like, there's no way it's not Ethan Embry. I mean, why would you have him in this little spot and the red herring of, oh, he just left here?
I didn't think it was him, but I was, you know, when they're at the hospital being like, it's weird that Ethan Embry is like, I felt like it was like a 90s thing. Like, oh, he was a big 90s guy, so he got this little bit part.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, the fact that he was one of the killers in the end, I was like, it makes, Ethan Embry, but like, it's the hospital guy? Like, why?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yeah. It was really unsatisfying.
Yeah.
Because even her, you know, ditzy neighbor,
who I thought was Kirby the whole movie, like, I thought it was the same act. Yeah, I didn't realize it was Anna Camp. And then, but again, like, so now it's just some random neighbor that was invented for this movie?
Yeah, and her reason behind it.
A book she read that we don't ever see? Like, Sydney's not, like, at a book signing ever? This happened, like, years ago off camera?
Yeah, and it's crazy because she killed her son to make a point.
Yeah.
Which, okay. Yeah, there's some set pieces that are really cool. You know, I had fun with it, but too, I don't like the reveal was a little let down, and because I honestly would have just had Stu Mocker be it. and say, yeah, what he told you was right. I stumbled in there, found out you were here, and I'm back. Whatever, you can do it. It's a fucking movie. And there's some great moments. I think the interview with Gail and Sydney is great at the end, where Sydney says, you know, that's really unfair what you did to me. And then she realizes how much Gail has suffered as well. With she has the nerve damage from being stabbed, and obviously Dewey was murdered in the last episode, last movie, or two movies ago. What, two movies ago? One of them, I don't remember.
I think it was the last one.
It was. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, so there are some great moments there. The rest kind of lets you down, though. You know, it, I remember because I saw it Thursday, and I was with my wife as our anniversary, and so we just went and saw that movie. And the part where she shoots the ghost face through the wall and she comes out, people in my theater are going, why are you so fucking stupid?
Oh, and, yeah, I was thinking that too.
And when people vocalize that, you have a problem.
Yeah.
Because you're setting it up and it looks cool with the, you know, the leaves blowing and the ghost face costume blowing in the wind. Yeah. It's why did she do that?
No reason to leave. Like, yeah. You're in the safest place right now.
Obviously, he can't get in.
Yeah.
Because it's just...
But she's also been told many times to shoot them in the head. She doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, killing people is hard. But, the ending was really satisfying with how many times I shot her in the
head. Yeah, that was good. Yeah. Definitely not coming back.
You know, the two... Like, I loved the fight back. Me, as in my profession, if someone had a knife to my child's neck and they were that off center, I would fucking shoot them in the head. If he's a chief of police, I'd expect him to be really great at his job, and I would trust him if I had a gun pointed at somebody to just go boom. Anyways, that's not here or there.
Yeah.
But they had two scenes of the ghost face in the garage with tarps. And I go, why can we just get out of that? But I still had fun. I'm a completist. I already have all the other ones, so I'll get it. But I was disappointed because I think the trailer's really great.
I don't think I ever even saw it. But yeah, it's just like, you know, if it your wire's buzzing. Oh, sorry. Yeah. So if the movie's around Sydney and like kind of her arc is that she has a daughter that she has kind of held all this back from and made her unprepared for future killings. And there's like an AI terrorist basically threatening them. Like, why do you abandon, like, even if it's not Stu, like, it should be someone else with like enough knowledge and enough closeness to the family to go through the trouble of creating an AI character to harass her with.
Yeah.
And not just some random... hospital employees and her neighbor who we barely met.
Yeah.
Like what a just, yeah, it's so unsatisfying. Like it should be someone like really close or like her husband. I actually thought like it would be cool if it was her daughter.
Oh, that would be cool.
Getting revenge for like, you know, I have to deal with like all
this. You never really told me about you. Now I'm making you relive. That would have been really
cool. Yeah. Like I get harassed at school about this stuff. I have to like look behind my back all the time because like I think it could happen to me. The only way it's ever going to end is if you are gone. Like if Sydney isn't around to be harassed by a killer, I'm safe.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of surprised that was the killer. Anyway,
the gore is great.
The gore is cool.
That one girl that he sliced from when she was swinging on the
thing where like, again like out. So brutal for like a character that has like no, like she's in a couple scenes and she's just friends.
And what did she do?
Yeah. And then her other friends later, you know, her boyfriend just like he's just on the street, gets stabbed a bunch of times. He's gone.
Well, you never know.
All these other characters are just like you never get to know.
Definitely cannon fodder.
And then the characters from the last movie who are back is like Gail's crew, like they get brutally stabbed, but they're fine.
Yeah, it's a long running joke, I guess.
Yeah,
because they get stabbed in every movie.
Yeah, And yeah, it doesn't really have like a meta element to it. It doesn't really have any commentary on the state of horror movies at all. It's just, yeah.
Just a ghost face killing people.
And I, again, like at seven scenarios by now, it would, I think to me, it's more interesting if there is just like, they kind of flirted with this in the last one of just like, there's just like psychotic fans out there, you know, trying to recreate the movie. So this movie would be way more interesting if there's like eight or nine psychotic killers trying to like go after them to be the one who finally gets Sydney, you know?
Yeah. Like a Ghostface Club.
Yeah.
If you're listening, Spyglass, call us. Paramount, I think, owns it now.
Copyright Realness Podcast.
Yeah.
Paramount Warner Brothers owns it now.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that was the big news of the week.
Maybe it's, next week. No, it's it beyond is the this last week. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. And you can see it or not. I mean, obviously a lot of people saw it, so it doesn't really matter what we say.
Yeah, biggest opening. But again, it's different from buying a ticket to leaving the theater. We'll see. We'll see what next week's revenue is.
Yeah, we teased it a little bit in the news. Netflix bowed out of buying Warner Brothers and...
Pretty easily, too.
Yeah, Paramount's now going to be the sole owner of all their... See, I didn't know this. They were actually... Paramount was to buy everything. So now, you know, my Mortal Kombat, NetherRealm Studios, and...
It's crazy that, like, the FCC is already like, oh, yeah, we'll prove it. It's no big deal.
Weird.
When it's like, wait, Netflix, Warner Brothers had more antitrust issues than Paramount, who is, like, basically has all the same departments.
The only thing I can say is because... If they fold it into a streaming service and it's already the biggest streaming service and you're bringing in another streaming service that
But that's not why Netflix wants it. They want the studio side so they can do theatrical.
Then they want the content.
They don't even, in the content, but like, it's not about
But if they bought a
bigger streamer.
But they'd get HBO Max as well.
Yeah.
So then they'd put all their streaming stuff on there.
But they don't want like the television stuff. Like they don't want the subsidiaries. They just want the studio.
Yeah.
Whereas Paramount gets like CNN and
BET
and like all that.
Yeah. I mean, whatever. I mean, obviously there's no way we're going to stop it because the Ellisons and Trump love each other. So, I mean, hopefully they're true to their words and they'll release 15 movies from Warner Brothers and 15 movies from Paramount.
And then cut all the redundancies. So
a
ton of people are going to lose their jobs. Whereas the Netflix one, you know,
It's really neither deal, I think, is good for consumers.
Right.
It doesn't matter to us.
Why do they have to sell it all?
Yeah. I know. Could you imagine?
And then Paramount has so much debt in the deal now that their credit rating got dropped to junk level.
Well, because they don't care.
I know. Rich people just find money wherever. Yeah,
it doesn't matter. They'll just get a loan from Chase or U.S. Bank or whomever. It doesn't matter to them. They don't care. They don't care that some dude is working in IT who, you know, keeps the servers running for HBO, won't have a job because they'll just move the guy from Paramount over there.
Yeah. $113 billion deal and 80 of it's debt.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Could you imagine you have so much money you can take on that debt and you don't even care? Because what they'll do, they'll just do is start doing write-offs. And David Zaslav, who they only had Warner Brothers, 4 years now? You ruined the company. You made people not want to work with you by shelving movies that were completed. It's just a mess, and
gets to walk away with it.
Yeah. Billions of dollars.
It's disgusting.
He literally sold off, I think I was reading this morning, $200 million worth of shares or something like that. He doesn't give a shit. Millions and billions of dollars. Who cares? You know?
Yeah. Sucks.
Yeah. And they don't pay taxes. Well, you Instacart and pay more taxes than they do. So, fuck you. Hey, we watch movies throughout the week in a segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So, this is the stuff we've been watching.
Brad, you better thrill me with what you watched this week.
Do you want me to talk about 50 Shades of Grey? I finally watched
that.
Did
you really?
It was one of the February movies. I was like, fuck it, I'll watch it. And
it's bad, right?
Yeah.
I used to hate watch it with James and Brooks and Laura because it came out every Valentine's Day.
Yeah, I was like, I want to see what they were laughing about. And I don't know if I laughed, but
it's a chore to watch them.
Yeah, the dialogue is just, again, it's like Titanic's like just kind of bad. And I've forgotten most of it already, but like.
You forgot that she was a book editor? Or wait.
She works at a hardware store.
I don't ever remember.
So. She doesn't interview her friends and who her friend is in college. She's the actual journalist. It's just like, why is this billionaire fixated on this one girl who works in a hardware store?
Yeah.
Like, and then she's so naive. Like, what she's like, what's a butt plug? Like, but she knows all this other stuff. I'm just like, I don't know.
It's it goes in your butt.
And then it just ends. Yeah. Like, she's like, she gets like slapped on the back six times and she's like, I can't.
Yeah.
This is too much for me.
It gets worse. You obviously haven't seen the other ones.
I probably won't see the other ones.
You don't need to.
Yeah.
Unless you want to laugh. I'll never forget in the, I think it's the third one. Yeah. They think he dies in this helicopter crash.
I know.
Crash.
That's the thing I keep running for you guys.
Fuck, man.
He just shows up at the office later after.
Wait, and he has dirt on his face.
Yeah.
I always said it's a movie about sex that is not sexy at all.
Nope.
It's not shot well. It's not. I mean, there's naked bodies in it, but it's nothing sexy about it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel you.
Speaking of sexy movies, I also watched Eyes Wide Shut for the first time.
Oh, that's a great movie.
I guess.
I like it more the more I watch it. I remember seeing it the first time and not being the biggest fan.
Yeah, it's more interesting than I expected, but it's also like...
It's weird.
I feel like it could be weirder, you know?
No. I always thought it was bizarre that he would just show his ID and he could get into places because he was a doctor.
Yeah.
And then at the end... You know, it's explained to him, oh, this never really happened. What are you talking about? And I guess it's supposed to be, it's all a dream.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I just got that, like, you know, it's just, yeah, this guy, he finds out his wife is actually kind of like
Fidelio.
Mentally cheating on her. And so he gets just really jealous about it and tries to like find a way to cheat on her without cheating on her.
Yeah.
And then it just spirals into like accidentally wandering into like.
Yeah, I got the 4K and I need there is a commentary on it. I haven't watched it yet. There's a commentary with a film critic on it, which I'd be really interested to listen to.
Yeah. But yeah, at the end, I'm just kind of like, okay, so what was the point of it?
Yeah, no. Remember when he's in the bathroom and he's explaining how she isn't really dead? You know, wait a minute, but I thought it was a murder mystery thing with a dead woman. And...
Oh, where were we talking? Oh, no, not. He's not in the bathroom. He's talking to, he's like at the pool room.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the pool room. Sorry.
What's that guy's name? He's a famous director.
Yeah.
I still don't believe him. I think he's just like explaining away. Like, I think they really did kill her, but like,
I don't know.
It's another billionaire just like weaseling his way out of whatever. But yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, the acting's great, and I mean, it's shot really cool. It's lit with candles, if I remember right.
Yeah. I watched Clockwork Orange recently. It's interesting to see like, the filmmaking, like cinematically.
Yeah, he's also someone, you know, because people always work with Fincher and they always want to work with Kubrick because obviously he made, you know, really great movies. But I don't know. I'd get really sick of doing the same scene over and over again. You know, when Fincher says, oh, 150 takes. Really? Come on, dude.
Yeah. And the last thing I saw, brace yourself, is a movie I saw called Fuck My Son.
What?
Which I heard someone recommend on a podcast about movies somewhere. And I was like, that sounds interesting, but I hopefully it's not exactly that.
It's not literal.
Yeah. They described it as like, it's this woman gets kidnapped by an old lady and the old lady's trying to get her to fuck her like unattractive, losery son.
Sounds like a Tales from the Crypt episode.
And you think like, oh, okay, well, that's going to be the setup, but it's going to like show us something else. Nope. It's kind of like a trauma movie where the practical effects are incredible. And you're like, that's impressive. So why the fuck did you AI generate a ton of shit around it? There's like this really funny, like, remember in Aqua Teen Hunger Force, the opening like concession stand stuff? Like, there's a play on that of like... telling the audience to shut the fuck up before the movie. That's great, but it has like titles that are AI generated. And then, later on in the movie, there's the daughter in the movie. There's like a sausage party. Like the kid's a fan of like these meat creatures. This like animated series based on like meat. like a T-bone steak, a chicken leg type stuff.
As one should be.
But they look like Sausage Party characters, like in 3D. Like they're AI generated.
Oh, the cartoon.
And they talk to her, like they're inside her head when all this horrible stuff's happening. So anyway, yeah, this woman and her daughter go to a thrift store, and she's being stalked by this old lady, and she eventually kidnaps her, and both of them takes them back to this farm in the middle of nowhere, trying to get the lady to fuck her son, who you think is probably just going to be like some, you know, middle-aged loser. And they wheel him out in this wheelchair, and he's like basically like Pizza the Hutt from Spaceballs. So like, yeah, a guy in a like suit, like a prosthetic suit, who's just like super gross looking, looks like Pizza the Hutt. Yeah, and this old lady is like, you know, threatening her, like, I'll kill your kid if you don't fuck my son. And the woman's just like constantly trying not to fuck it. And then the creature, like, eventually she has to reach into his groin. Like, it's so flabby. She, like, pulls out, like, bugs and, like, slime. And eventually she finally, like, gets him aroused. And he has, like, this huge, like, 12-foot long hose of a penis that she has to fuck. And, yeah.
Where does one even find this movie?
This is playing at the Sea Film Center for two nights only. Keith Garcia came out and introduced it. He was like, I don't know why the fuck you guys are here for this movie. It's terrible. But here you go. Like, it was longer than that. I'm paraphrasing. But he definitely had an air of like, this sucks. I hate that we're playing it. But you came out for it. So here we go. And yeah, I'm watching the movie. I'm just like, okay, the AI generated stuff. But like, the commitment to the premise and like, it definitely has like a gross trauma vibe to it. Like, I appreciate the practical effects. They're all great. I was just like, I was hoping for like, you know, we're examining some other human condition under this premise. And that doesn't happen. It's literally this old lady trying to get, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
at one point she escapes with her daughter, and then, you know, the cop shows up, and it turns out the cop is the dad, brings him right back. She has to fuck the son. She fucks the son. Spoiler alert. It builds itself as like really X-rated, but it's pretty tame, I get really. Yeah, the daughter gets cooked in an oven. So it doesn't hold back on that. And then like later, you know, once the woman's traumatized from everything, she burns the house down and herself. She shows up in the hospital and turns into a vampire, I think, and kills like, there's these three tenors. At one point, like, she wants some sexy music to play on to get her in the mood. And so the old lady, like, plays the three tenors. Like, that's the sexiest, like, operatic movie music she has. And so anyway, the actual three tenors, like, people playing Placido Domingo or whatever, show up at the hospital to sing for her. And she, like, turns into a vampire, I guess, and kills them all. All
right.
Yeah, it gets weird. Yeah. Weirder. Anyway, yeah. So, yeah, I was like, I left the movie being like, well, it was creative and it like really swung for everything. But then I thought more about the AI. And I was like, God, that's shitty. Like, what a way to like tank your movie. And then Keith also said like, yeah, interviews, the director said like, it's AI, but it's a commentary on AI. I'm like, bullshit. Like, it just really feels like that's the only way you could do the effects for cheap for those scenes. They said like, oh, yeah, we did AI, but then we like used real artists to do the final part of it. I was like, well, the final looks like AI, so like it's just too slick. So anyway, fuck my son.
All right. I'll never see that movie.
Yeah. Maybe just streaming only. Don't pay for it. I don't know.
Did you see that the Psycho Goreman made another movie, Deathstalker?
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I haven't. It was the Alamo. It was so brief I missed it, but yeah.
No, I know Patton Oswalt's in it.
I know.
I need to see it.
It was only at the Westminster one. It sucked.
It just came out on 4K.
Yeah. I'll catch it.
Yeah.
But
I was curious. Yeah. Because we talk about weird movies. Or do I? I watched Predator Badlands again on 4K. Looks great. Movie's still awesome. It's one of my favorite movies from last year. Yeah. It's just a sweet movie. Just really cool. I rewatched... my movie I own that I haven't seen is the King Kong 4K 2005. I watched the director's cut, which is 3 hours and 20 minutes long. And my kid watched the whole thing too. And I have to say, it's 20 years old and Kong still looks really good in it. I mean, there's some things, you know, it's always, I always notice the mouths and things like that. It's not completely rendered, his teeth and things like that. But for the character is still great. And I think Peter Jackson does a great job for you to empathize and sympathize with Kong, you know, being thrust into New York City. And yeah, the effects still hold up. I'd say 90% of them. You know, there's always that they're running against the green screen that always looks kind of wonky, but the creatures look incredible. And just like in Lord of the Rings, the really wide shots where they're showing a lot of people and they're all CG, it just doesn't look quite right. And you can pick it up pretty quickly, but I still think it's a pretty great movie. And it's really well made and it's beautiful. And Naomi Watts is stunning in it. I think she has a very classic movie actress vibe, which I know they're going for. So, I think you can get the 4K for something like $12 now, and it's totally worth it because it has both the theatrical and the extended on 4K, and it has a whole third disc is nothing but bonus features, which Peter Jackson usually does pretty well. I got a new dog, so I kind of been staying home this week. I watched You'll See Me When I'm Gone. Wait, what the fuck? It's Patton Oswalt's wife who passed away. I'll Be Gone in the Dark. It's a documentary that's on HBO. And it's about, so Michelle McNamara was a true crime writer. And she, the case she was always interested in was, they called him the East Area Rapist. And he was a serial rapist who raped 50 women. And he also murdered 13 people. And so she made it her quest to figure out who this guy was. And the series is really fascinating because it also delves into her, and Patton Oswalt's in it a lot. And it's really raw and emotional, because you find out she, the more she kind of dug into, this killer and this serial rapist, and it's horrible stuff. I mean, some of the darkest stuff I've ever heard. Her personal well-being starts to deteriorate and she starts relying on opiates. She takes Xanax to fall asleep and then she takes Adderall to stay awake. And as she's working on this book, she writes really well. And they say, hey, we want you to write this book about tracking him down, but we want you to tell your story too. You know, why are you into this? And so she was working on this deadline that she had to have the book out, and she died in her sleep.
So it all kind of like Heath Ledger'd.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm totally on accident. And they have the 911 call with Patton Oswalt, and it's really sad. And he makes this vow that he's going to continue not only is going to put out the book, but she had assistants that were helping her. So she had something over 150 pages written and a bunch of other stuff. And so what they did is her research assistant and a writer and the editor all got together and they wrote this book and or finished her book for her, which she wrote it, but basically they reorganized it and made it what the book is. Cause she only had 150 pages written. And so the book comes out and it's this instant bestseller, and they talk about it's one of the best written true crime books. They have an interview. This documentary is following Patton Oswalt around because he says, you know, it's my wife's work. I want to make sure this book gets out because, you know, it's kind of dark.
It killed her.
It killed her. And so he's sitting down with the two guys that helped finish the book. And I forget her name, Gillian Flynn. She wrote Gone Girl. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about the book and they get done. And so the book was out for 2 weeks. And at 2 a.m, they get a text that they caught the guy. So it happened in the 70s and 80s. So he was free for over almost 40 years. And yeah, surprise, he's a cop who hated women because he got left by his fiance. So what he would do, it started out as just, he would ransack stores and people's homes and steal their property. And then he moved into sexually assaulting women. And they found that when they started reporting on it, he would do what they said he wouldn't, because he wouldn't go into a house that had a dog or a man in it. Then he started going into those places and killing people. Fucking horrible. And yeah, they caught him. And so her book and her, because it started as a magazine article and it kind of renewed this interest in it. And she has, they interspersed her recordings that she was doing. And everything she said, what she thinks who would perpetrate this, is pretty accurate. And so, in a way, it's a testament to her. And they have the victims of this, these assaults that lived. And it's sad, but it's also powerful, because you see these women go on to live these incredible lives. And they were, and Patton was signing the books at this one Barnes & Noble in Sacramento where all these crimes happened, and these victims came and saw him, and he didn't know who they were, because she used pseudonyms throughout the whole book. And so as he's meeting them, is really cool. And so hats off to Michelle McNamara for cracking that case. And that dude was 70 something years old, and he got 13 life sentences because the statute of limitations went out on all the rapes he did, so they couldn't get him on those. But they all got to say their piece at the victim impact statements. So it's about 8 hours long, but it's really fascinating. And it's a really great story. And what I really respected about Patton Oswalt in is he doesn't hold anything back. There's this really sad exchange where she wants another kid and he flat out says no in this text message exchange. And she even can read her pain in her text back, and she says, "So that's a definitive no." And he said, "Yes." So it's kind of cool that he let himself be that vulnerable. I'm guessing, I didn't look, he's probably a producer on it, but you know, even putting the 911 call in there, and when she died, it's pretty harrowing. So yeah, I totally recommend it. It's a fascinating thing. And the last thing I watched is I Am Chevy Chase and You're Not. And the only thing I got out of it is he's an asshole who doesn't take responsibility for what he did, but he's also kind of funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds familiar.
Yeah. It's pretty, you know, you already heard these stories about him, and when he's being interviewed, you can see he's really funny until he's asked a probing or, a question that's uncomfortable, and then he makes a joke or he insults the woman who's interviewing him, which is kind of gross. Because there's a part where she says, we want to get to know you. And he says, well, it's not going to be easy for you. And she said, well, why would you say that? And he says, because you're stupid. And you go, okay. And it's just, it sucks because he is funny. And, he really, when you, cause they go through his mid-80s to late-80s career. And, I mean, he had hit after hit after hit. And then you see, and it happens to a lot of people, and you always know the people in Hollywood that no one likes, because they're popular for a little bit, and then they slowly start waning away. And how mean he was on Community. I mean, they literally only had, what's the Broken Lizard guy? He directed a lot of stuff. Jay
Chandrasekhar?
Yeah. So he's the only one from Community they have on there. And he says, yeah, he was a fucking asshole. I was there the day he was fired. And he said they literally would they'd shoot all his scenes in the morning to get him out of the way so the cast could enjoy themselves. And I think it was season three or four, where Dan Harmon purposely broke his character's legs. So he had to be in this wheelchair. So they shot all his stuff, and then everybody else could do their stuff. And yeah, it's just interesting. But it wasn't as deep as I wanted it to be.
Yeah. Did they talk about like why he was on the show to begin with?
Yeah, he really liked the pilot, and it was really funny.
But like, so Dan Harmon was like, oh, I should get Chevy Chase to do this. Yeah?
Yeah. Hmm. And he decided to do it. And he is. He's really good in it for a little bit. But then he said, I didn't like that they started making my character super racist, which is fair. But he also started calling people on the show the N-word, which isn't cool. So it doesn't get enough into it. And it seems that the documentarian, either she wasn't able to, or she played it kind of safe, which I wanted to see them just really go after.
Yeah. Well, I heard it like, you know, the Chevy Chase estate even had some say in like,
oh, I'm sure. How much,
so they were like, they probably forced her to pull back.
And I mean, I get it. I mean, cause they interview his daughters and stuff, and he's been married to this one woman for 40 years. And I get it. I mean, he's probably not as bad as he is, but he's also not nice.
Yeah. Whatever trauma you have is an excuse to take it out on other people. Yeah.
I mean, he was abused by his mom, and they talk about it, and his brother talks about it. But yeah, I didn't learn anything that shocking about him. It's stuff you already knew happened. So yeah. Next week, The Bride is our film of the week.
Cool.
Which every time I see something new, I'm actually kind of want to see this movie. It seems bonkers.
I've seen the trailer so much though. I'm just, ready to like see other stuff about it.
Yep. I'm cool with them not revealing too much. I mean, I've read reviews and they say it's pretty great. I mean, it looks different, so why the fuck not?
Yep.
So yeah, till next week. We'll see you at the movies. A real nerd knows who shot a real nerd. Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it!